Today is Thursday, February 13th. We're going to start on page 42 with diastole or diastole and systole or systole. So the first thing I should mention to you is the terms here. The term diastole or diastole simply means heart relaxation. And systole or systole means heart contraction. Now, you know, sometimes people get lazy when they talk about this stuff and they don't specify whether they're mentioning the atria or the ventricles. We should be really clear when we talk. We should say atrial diastole, which tells me, you know, diastole is relaxation. Atrial diastole means the heart's relaxed. Those atria are relaxed specifically. If I say ventricular diastole, what specifically do I mean? Ventricles are relaxed, right? So when we go through this heart contraction and relaxation cycle, we're going to find that when the atria are relaxed, what are the ventricles probably doing?
Contracting,
the opposite, right? So it's kind of confusing, I think, to say just diastole and not say specifically what's in diastole. But nonetheless, people do it all the time. They'll simply say the heart's in diastole, and you're left wondering, well, what do you mean? Do you mean the atria are relaxing, or do you mean the ventricles are relaxing? So if somebody's not clear, then when we just simply say diastole, we really mean the ventricular diastole time period. So why do the ventricles get the nod here? Why are they the big deal about the heart? Yeah, they're the ones pumping the blood throughout the body and back and forth to the lungs. So they're the ones that really get the nod. When we leave off and we're not specific about the diastole period we're referencing, we really mean what the ventricles are doing. So that is a safe assumption for us to make. If we don't specify which diastole, atrial or ventricular, then it is okay for you to assume we're talking about ventricular diastole. Okay. And then same thing over here with systole or contraction. Of course, systole means heart contraction. It can specifically mean atrial systole, which means atria are doing what? Contracting. And ventricular systole means? Ventricles are contracting. But if we don't tell you what we're talking about, we simply say the heart's in systole, what is your assumption?
Ventricular,
right. So just keep in mind, if we're not specific, the nod goes to those ventricles. That's really who we're talking about here. So diastole with no specifier there is ventricular diastole, and systole, of course, again, we look at those ventricles because they're the ones pumping that blood. Confused? Okay here? Okay. Any questions or anything I can clarify for you? We did talk about this on Thursday. I want to hit this one more time. We're going to be talking about heart pressures today. And at the very top of your page, we did talk about that chart in here on Tuesday. I just want to reiterate again that the mmHg down here, mm is millimeters. What is Hg?
Mercury.
And when we talk about millimeters mercury, we're talking about the column of mercury that is raised by the pressure exerted in your arteries. So, you know, when we're looking at 120, we're looking at a pretty strong force there that raises a column of mercury 120 millimeters. That's all that means. 80, of course, is a slightly lower pressure. That's, again, the column of mercury that is raised by the pressure in the arteries. It's pretty hard to wrap a cuff around the heart, so we just take for granted that what we get out of your arm is going to be somewhat akin to what that heart is pumping. So the higher pressure there is what we often call our systolic pressure. And because we're saying systolic pressure, what's happening in the heart? Ventricles are contracting, right. And we say that 80 is our diastolic pressure, and that means ventricles are relaxing, right. So those pressures are something we're going to tie into our conversation today. Oh, and by the way, I should say this, and I'll try to say it again several times. These are pressures for the left side of your heart, not the right side. Okay, so 120 over 80 implies left side pressure of the heart, not the right side. Okay, so 120 over 80 is left side pressure, not right side. And if it's not clear now why it's left side and not right side pressure, it will become clear in just a few minutes as we walk through diastole and systole and blood flow. Okay, so what we have next on your sheet, they're about halfway down page 42. It says cardiac cycle, 0.8 seconds. We know the 0.8 seconds, that's old news. What we're going to do now is we're going to walk through a cycle, a 0.8 second cycle. And I'm going to use these two pictures here to help us walk through and understand what's happening. And this is simply a story that you can tell. To know whether or not you've got this down pat, I would recommend talking it out loud to somebody. You know, work yourself out loud through this process. I don't know that this is necessarily a great thing for flashcards, but I do think that you can walk it through verbally and get this stuff to make sense. So I'm going to start you, you'll notice there, is mid to late ventricular diastole. So let's translate. What does diastole mean?
Relaxation.
And because I'm saying it's ventricular diastole, I'm saying that the ventricles are relaxing. So at this point, this is where we're going to start the process. You'll notice in parentheses, it says ventricular filling. What are we filling the ventricles with? With blood. And by the way, where does that blood come from? From the two atria that sits above them. Okay, so let's start with this picture here on the left. It's ventricular diastole. Right now, what do you notice about your bicuspid and tricuspid valves? They're currently sitting there open. And what do you notice about your semilunar valves? They're closed. So right now, we're watching the heart fill with blood. We've got the AV valves here open. The semilunar valves are closed. And right now, the right atrium is receiving blood from three veins. One of them is the SVC. Another is your IVC. And your third one is what?
Coronary sinus.
Coronary sinus. All three veins bring what type of blood back to the right atrium?
Deoxygenated.
Good. So under low pressure, this blood flows back into the right atrium. The right atrium has an open doorway with the right ventricle. That valve sitting there is open. So blood flows from right atrium through tricuspid, and it drains down here into the right ventricle. That's why we call it ventricular filling. At the very same time, on the left side of the heart, what four veins dump blood into your left atrium?
Pulmonary veins.
And what type of blood is this?
Oxygenated.
Oxygenated. And our mitral or bicuspid valve is currently open, so the blood drains into that left atrium through the open bicuspid valve and down into that left ventricle. Okay, so you'll notice that this is just, it's not a very exciting event. We're sitting here with the chambers filling with blood, and those ventricles are starting to stretch as we put more and more blood down there into them. Let me take you to the next major heading. It says next, atrial systole. You don't have to even read to know what this means. What are the atria going to do now?
Contract.
They're going to contract, right. So how do we tell the atria to contract? SA node fires, right. So the SA node fires, it sits up here at the top of your right atrium, and it sends a wave of a nerve impulse across to the left atrium and to the right atrium. So they will depolarize at the same time. To tie this back into what we covered Tuesday, what wave now appears on your EKG?
P
wave, good. So SA node fires, we get a P wave on the EKG, and shortly thereafter, what happens to your two atria? They contract, good. And they only have to contract with not a very strong contraction, right? Because where are they sending their blood? Down to the ventricles. So it's a squeeze on the atria. They send blood down into the two ventricles. And then, of course, we've now filled the ventricles with about as much blood as they can handle. Okay, so we've gotten to the point of squeezing your right atrium, forcing blood into your right ventricle. We just had a contraction in your left ventricle at the very same time. That blood travels now down into your left ventricle. Are you so far so good? Okay, so let's tie back in now to your worksheet. You'll notice that under atrial systole, it says second bullet point, the volume of blood in each ventricle is known as your end diastolic volume. In other words, this is EDV, and it's 120 milliliters of blood. And you say, whoa, wait a minute. We just did atrial systole. But who's important here? Not the atria.
Ventricles.
Ventricles are important. So we're at the end of the ventricle's diastolic time period. Okay, even though the atria just contracted, we just came to the end of the ventricular relaxation phase. So like I said, we gotta be really careful paying attention to who's in contraction and which chambers are in relaxation. So what this means is, as soon as your two atria contracted, they force some blood down here in these two ventricles. And each ventricle right now, the walls are stretched, and each one holds about 120 milliliters of blood, okay? So that is what we call an end diastolic volume. That is what we have the potential to pump out. So if you want to think about, you know, how much blood this is, a typical can, soft drink can, 200 and some milliliters, so we're looking at about half that. You know, it's not a huge amount of blood, but that's what we're going to have pumped out potentially from each heartbeat. All right. Next thing on your sheet is ventricular systole. This is atrial diastole. What does ventricular systole tell us?
Ventricles contract.
So let's go back to our story. We had talked about the SA node at the top of your right atrium notifying your atria to contract. They did so. They each pumped blood down into the ventricles. At the end of that process, we had about 120 mils in each ventricle. Well, about that time, that nerve impulse travels toward your IV septum, and it reaches number two in charge, which is your AV node. And about that time, your AV node fires off a nerve impulse. That nerve impulse travels down your bundle of His. It splits into a left and a right bundle branch, and each of those bundle branches travels down your interventricular septum. Where's the next place that nerve impulse travels?
Purkinje
fibers. And they're in the walls of your
ventricles.
Good. And when the Purkinje fibers release acetylcholine onto those myocardial muscle cells, what do those muscle cells start to do?
They get excited,
they depolarize, and you're right, they contract. So if we take it in slow-mo, when that acetylcholine arrives in those ventricular walls, the cells depolarize, and then they contract, okay? So you'll notice our first bullet point under ventricular systole. AV node fires an impulse, ventricles begin to contract, and when they begin to contract, those papillary muscles, you remember those little finger-like muscles down here? Those finger-like papillary muscles contract too. And they shorten and they pull down on the heartstrings. Now, what valves are we going to slam shut? Slam shut the tricuspid and the bicuspid valves. You pull down on those papillary muscles, that causes those two valves to slam shut. Okay, and you actually have a noise associated with that. Because they're slamming shut, and because blood is kind of ramming back up against them, you hear a noise, a lub noise, when that blood is flowing back against those AV valves that have just now closed. Like I mentioned, we're doing this in slow motion. Let me come back to this. SA node fired, atria depolarized and contracted. AV node fired next, it's close to that interventricular septum. The nerve impulse traveled down the bundle of His, split into bundle branches, and came up the walls in these ventricles to the Purkinje fibers. When the ventricles began to contract, the papillary muscles did too, and they slammed shut which valves?
AV valves.
AV valves. You'll notice what's going on with your semilunars.
They're shut.
Right now, they're shut. Okay, so if we stepwise this in slow motion, AV valves just slammed shut, They got pulled shut by the contraction of those papillary muscles. And the semilunar valves still are closed. We haven't yet forced them open. Okay? So that means that I'm transitioning over here to this picture. I've got my semilunars are starting to open. AV valves are closing. But there's a very short time period there where all four valves are closed. And on your worksheet, you'll notice it in all caps, isovolumetric contraction phase. And what this means is there's two times during heart cycle that the four valves are all closed together. And this is one of those two times. We're getting ready for the ventricles to contract. AV valves just closed. Semilunars have not yet opened. Okay, so then this is one of those times where all four heart valves are closed. Well, the ventricles are getting ready to contract. The pressure is now increasing in your two ventricles, and that pressure is pretty strong, especially on which side of your heart? Why is the left side experiencing such a high pressure? Pump to the body, right? So you got to get enough pressure to get it to the tips of your toes. So we've got to make sure that we have enough pressure or force behind that blood to get it out of the circulation. The right side has pressure, but it's not nearly as great. It's about 20% of the pressure that we experience on the left side. We're only sending blood from the right ventricle to what location? Out to the lungs. Yeah, so that's not where the story is, right? That's not really exciting. The exciting part is where that left ventricle is creating enough pressure to force the blood out into systemic circulation. Well, right now, the papillary muscles and the ventricles are contracting. That's keeping those AV valves closed. Now the force is so great, which valves are forced open?
Semilunars.
Now semilunars are forced open. So you can see blood is being forced through those two semilunar valves and out through the appropriate vessel. For instance, where does that right ventricle send blood?
Pulmonary trunk.
Pulmonary trunk, and that takes blood to the? Good. Is it oxygenated or deoxygenated?
Deoxygenated.
And of course, the real big story is over here on the left side. That left ventricle sends blood through an aortic semilunar valve and out through the aorta. What type of blood is that?
Oxygenated.
That's oxygenated. Okay. So at this point, during the height of ventricular contraction, which valves are open? Semilunars. And which valves should be slammed closed? AV valves are slam closed. Okay, that takes me to the top of page 43. At the very top of your page is a term called stroke volume. Stroke volume is the amount of blood each ventricle ejects with a contraction event. And it's about 70 milliliters of blood. Back up a step. EDV was end-diastolic volume. That means each ventricle was filled with about 120 milliliters of blood, but we just pumped out only 70. Okay, so why not pump them dry? Why not pump out everything you pumped in?
Gotta have some pressure in the system.
Gotta have some pressure in the system, right. So we are not pumping out 120. We're only pumping out a portion of what we arrived with. So let me go back here. When the SA node fired up here at the top of your right atrium, it told your two atria to depolarize and then to do what? Contract, okay? And then, of course, we got the blood down here at each ventricle. We arrived with 120 milliliters in each ventricle. That volume was EDV, or 120 total milliliters, right ventricle, 120 in the left ventricle. When the ventricles got the message from the AV node, they, of course, contracted, and each one is going to pump out a stroke volume of about 70 milliliters. That means your left ventricle pumps out 70, your right ventricle pumps out 70. So we're left with about how much blood in each ventricle?
50.
50, right. So if you notice the next term there, it says some blood remains behind. This is a volume in each ventricle known as end systolic volume, or ESV for short. That's about 50 milliliters. So just keeping track of the math here, each ventricle has an end diastolic volume of 120. That means each one can stretch and hold about that much blood. Every time your ventricles contract, each ventricle strokes out or ejects about 70 milliliters of blood. We call SV stroke volume. And if you do the math, what's left behind is ESV. And that's going to be about 50 milliliters of blood. Okay, so just to kind of give us a breakdown here, end diastolic volume is about 120 mils. That's what each ventricle can hold. What you're pumping out every time the heart contracts is stroke volume. That, of course, is left ventricle pumping out 70 and right ventricle pumping out 70. So what you're pumping out in the circulation is about 70 milliliters every time the heart beats. Now, that means that you're left behind with some blood in each ventricle, and that's going to be around 50 milliliters of blood. Say that again. In systolic volume, right. I know one of you got a calculator, right? Can you do the math for me there? If I say I'm pumping out 70 and I'm starting with 120, what's my percentage there? 58. That doesn't sound like a good number, does it? But you know what? That's a great number. So, you know, you would normally want to be pumping really efficiently, and you think, well, God, 58% doesn't sound like I'm doing a good job pumping blood, but that is spot on target. So when you're looking for ejection fraction, you're actually looking for how efficiently the heart is pumping, and if you're pumping out about 60% of what's coming in, you're doing a great job. That means the muscle in the heart is contracting efficiently, and it's ejecting that blood out into either systemic or pulmonary circulation. So normally, you know, you might think a 58 doesn't sound like a great score, but this is great. 58% is a spot-on score for ejection fraction. In fact, on your worksheet there, it says the ejection fraction should range somewhere between 50 and 65%, and that tells us that your heart is effectively pumping out the blood. If your ejection fraction is lower than 50%, let's say it's 30%, does that mean you're pumping out enough blood through stroke volume? And the real risk here is, what's happening to your cells and tissues? They're starving for oxygen. So if we have a really low ejection fraction, low means somewhere below that 50% range, then we're looking for, you know, maybe body cells or brain cells just not getting enough oxygenated blood. So the ideal range for EF is what they call this, is somewhere between 50 and 65%. talk about other stuff in here with an ejection fraction. There are other things in your bodies that operate with an EF or an ejection fraction percentage. Like if you have a kind of a finicky gallbladder and it's not really doing its job, they can measure to see if it's pumping out enough bile at a particular rate. So it too has an ejection fraction rate. All this does is it tells us if your heart's pumping blood efficiently, and somewhere between 50 and 65% for this rate is good. Most heart monitors now, you know, they've got all sorts of information on there. Down in the corner somewhere may be an EF and a percentage, and that just simply tells us how effective that heart is at pumping out the blood. So let me go back and hit this story from the top one more time. We're going to start with mid to late ventricular diastole. That means the ventricles are relaxing, and that means the atria are preparing to contract. Right now, we know the blood is flowing into the right atrium from three locations. They are SVC, and you got it. And that blood is what type?
Deoxygenated.
Deoxygenated. Low pressure for this blood coming back in, by the way. Right. Atriums, of course, sends blood down through an open valve. That valve is called
tricuspid
valve, and blood is pooling down here right now in this right ventricle. At the very same time, blood comes back into your left atrium from four veins. They are
pulmonary veins.
Is this blood oxygenated or deoxygenated?
Oxygenated.
Oxygenated. Which valve is currently open on the left side?
Mitral.
Good. And of course, that blood now travels down and pulls in that left ventricle. About this time, the SA node fires an impulse telling which chambers to contract.
Atria.
Atria, good. So when the atria contract, their contraction is not very strong, but it's strong enough to force the blood through open AV valves down to the ventricles. Pause right now. How much blood is in each ventricle? 120 milliliters. And because we are ending the ventricular diastole time period, is this volume known as end diastolic volume or end systolic volume?
End
diastolic volume. Okay, because the ventricles, they're the real show here. The atria, you know, they're secondary. So even though we just finished atrial systole, it's important that we're now ending ventricular diastole. So that's why we call it the EDV. About that time, the nerve impulse travels to the AV node close to that interventricular septum. The AV node fires an impulse that travels next to the
bundle of
His. It splits into bundle branches, travels up the walls in your Purkinje fibers. What are you telling your ventricles now to do?
Contract.
So they depolarize, they contract, they slam shut.
AV
valves. Good. So those finger-like papillary muscles contract and they pull shut on those AV valves. They slam shut, and for just a brief moment, all four valves are closed. This time period is known as, or this phase. Good. Isovolumetric contraction phase. So the ventricles are preparing to contract. All four valves are currently closed. Now, we started with 120 milliliters in each ventricle, and as the pressure rises and as the ventricles continue to contract, how much blood do we eject from each ventricle? 70, right? That's going to be what we pump out or eject from each ventricle. So the stroke volume from the right ventricle is 70 milliliters. The stroke volume from the left ventricle is also 70 milliliters. All right, so we're now pumping blood out, so which valves are now forced open?
Semilunar,
good. So if we're pumping out 70 milliliters for each stroke volume, how much blood does that leave behind for us in each ventricle?
50,
good. And that volume we leave behind is known as?
End systolic volume.
Good, end systolic volume, right. Okay, so in terms of efficiency, if you're arriving with 120 mils in each ventricle, you're pumping out 70, you're doing good. Your ejection fraction should be somewhere in that 50 to 65% range. And if we've got those numbers, that's where we'll be. So that looks good for us. Almost done with the cycle, because as you pump blood out, that is the only thing keeping those semilunars open. And when the blood is passed through the semilunar valve, through into the pulmonary trunk or into that aorta. There's nothing else forcing those cellulars to stay open. So now they
shut.
And they make a noise when they shut, and the blood gurgles back against them, making a loud sound called duck. Okay? So we often say that the lub sound comes from the closure of those AV valves, but a shorter, quicker duck comes from the closure of those semilunar valves. So they say it's not just the valve closing that makes the noise. They say it's also the turbulence of blood ramming back up against those valves that makes a sound for us to hear. Okay? So we know that a lubbed up sound comes from one heart cycle. That's one heartbeat that comes from the closure of those valves. I think, you know, common misconception is that the heartbeat is actually coming from the ventricles or the atria contracting, and it's really not. It's actually the valve closure and the turbulence of blood back against that valve that creates the noise. So if we play this through in slow motion, blood just got ejected. That was our stroke volume, right? Blood just got ejected out through your pulmonary trunk and your aortic semilunar valve there through the aorta. These two semilunar valves now slam shut. We have not yet opened up your two AV valves. So this is our second opportunity to have all four heart valves closed. And this phase is called what?
Relaxation phase.
Good. Isovolumetric relaxation phase. We are preparing to go back from ventricular systole into a ventricular diastole relaxation time period. Okay, so second opportunity for all four heart valves to be at closed. And this is called isovolumetric relaxation phase. Well, about that time, these ventricles begin to repolarize and relax, and those papillary muscles will repolarize and relax too. That causes which valves to reopen once again? AV valves will reopen one more time, and now we've come full cycle back to ventricular diastole. And so blood drains back into the right atrium from SVC, IVC, and coronary sinus. Blood drains back into the left atrium from where? Pulmonary veins. Right, so we're back to where we started in a ventricular diastole or a relaxation time period. Okay, so I just want to make a point here. There is never a time when all four heart valves are open, but there's two times when all four heart valves are closed, and those are the isovolumetric relaxation and contraction phases. Okay. I know this probably makes okay sense right now because we're talking and walking through it, but go home if you can today and do this again and do it every day until you get this where it's routine. It really is a story that you gotta tell, and you gotta include all the parts, right, to get it to make sense. So what I can do on next Tuesday's class period is just retell the story one more time. You eventually wanna get used to just walking through the cycle, knowing when the valves are open, when the valves are closed, keeping straight, isovolumetric contraction phase and relaxation phase, understanding the difference between diastole and systole for the ventricles and where that blood is flowing. You'll also want to be able to include, when you talk yourself through this, EDV, stroke volume, ESV, and what those volumes are, and then have an appreciation for, you know, 50 to 65% is actually a good target range for us. So if you're getting yourself to that point where you can include all this in the conversation, then I'd say you're probably on track for that stuff on the test. So what I may say to you on the test is, the heart is in ventricular systole. Which valves are forced open now?
Semilunar
is good. I may say to you, we're in ventricular systole. Which valves just got shut?
AV
valves, right. I may say to you, the left ventricle just ejected 70 milliliters of blood. That volume is called? Stroke volume, right. I may say the atria just contracted and forced blood into each ventricle. The volume in each ventricle is now how much milliliter? 120. And that volume is called?
EDV.
Yeah, end diastolic volume, or EDV for short. I may say to you, the blood just pumped out about 70 mils from each ventricle. How much is left behind?
50 milliliters.
Should be 50 milliliters. And that's called?
ESV.
ESV, right. I may say to you, the left ventricle just contracted. It pumped blood up through which valve?
Aortic
semilunar. And how much blood is ejected through that aorta?
The 70
milliliters, right. And that's a volume known as?
SV,
stroke volume. Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where you want to get, is being to that level of comfort with it. It sounds like this is making pretty good sense so far. Is there any part that I can go back and hit for you today?
The isovolumetric relaxation and contraction phase when you're all four briefly closed.
Right.
The relaxation phase is only during the ventricular diastole, right?
You're heading back into that relaxation, right. And the isovolumetric contraction phase, you're heading into a systolic phase or contraction event.
Okay.
Let me make sure I said that right. Isovolumetric contraction phase at the bottom of page 42, you're heading into a contraction event, which is systole. And on page 43, you'll notice isovolumetric relaxation phase, you know, that is that very end of the diastolic phase. So it's weird because they line up at a strange time during the heart cycle. So that is the key thing to keep. What I have to do to keep it straight, to be honest, is I have to back up several phases before and then work myself to that point. Because if you were to ask me straight out which one we're in, I would want to make sure that I'm tracing it properly to get the right phase. Any other questions on page 42 or half of 43? About middle of page 43, you'll notice right and left side pressure differences. So let's talk about that. When we're talking about right side pressures, we're talking about the pulmonary side of your heart. In other words, the right side of your heart is sending blood out to a pulmonary circuit. When the right ventricle contracts, it sends blood to the pulmonary trunk and out to the lungs. The pressure doesn't have to be great. In fact, during ventricular systole on the right side, the pressure is only 24 millimeters mercury. During ventricular diastole on the right side, the pressure is only 8 millimeters mercury. So 24 over 8 is right side pressure. They can actually run a little sensor into your heart if somebody's got some heart issues, and they can leave the sensor sitting there, and a monitor will actually show what their right and left side pressures are. So it's really cool that we can put a monitor, a little tiny sensor in the heart, and be able to tell what's going on there. Left side pressure is what we often talk about, the 120 over 80, or the better number, which is 110 over 70. That, of course, 110 or 120 number is ventricular systole, meaning what? 110 or 120 is ventricular systole, meaning the ventricles are contracting, okay? And to be specific, we're talking left ventricle. The 80 number there is ventricular diastole. That's the pressure when the atria are contracting or the ventricles are relaxed. Okay, so let me repeat this. 24 over 8 is right side pressures. 120 over 80 is left side pressures. The higher of the two numbers means the ventricles are contracting. The lower of the two numbers means the ventricles are relaxing. Or, this is where it really gets hairy.
The atria are relaxed at the high number.
Yes. Yeah, the atria relax at the high number, and the atria contract at the low number. See how wicked that gets really quick? Okay, so here's one way to look at it. 120 over 80 is ventricular contraction 120, ventricular relaxation 80. Or you can look at it from the perspective of your atria, and during 120, your atria are relaxing, and during the 80, your atria are contracting. So really, our focus is never on the atria, it's always on what those ventricles are doing. So that's why we often stick to that story. But I just wanted to tell you that if you read your book, read any internet resource, they will talk about atrial systole during these numbers as well, and that's why. Yeah. Make it confusing, right? Okay, so what we'll stick with is 24 over 8. This means ventricular contraction for 24, ventricular relaxation for 8. 120 over 80, same thing. It's just for the left side, though. It's ventricular contraction for 120, ventricular relaxation for the 80. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so left side, right side. Left side, of course, is the higher pressure because it is our systemic circuit. Now, keeping that in mind, the left side pressures are higher because it's a systemic circuit. Let me take you to the bottom of the page with abnormal heart sounds and valve problems because, well, they arise from pressure issues quite often. So the first one's not necessarily a pressure issue, but it's a valve that is incompetent, meaning it doesn't close properly. So when you think about what these valves do, they're forcing a one-way path of blood through the heart. We don't want blood to backflow into its previous location. That is the whole point for them closing, is to maintain pressure and to force the blood to the next location. So when a valve is not working properly, we just have to think backwards in terms of our blood flow. So let's take this one here. This is an aortic valve that is incompetent. And so when blood is ejected through that aortic semilunar valve, it's coming from the left ventricle up through the valve and into the aorta. It's not supposed to go backwards, right? But if you've got an aortic valve that's not closing properly, every time the left ventricle contracts, the blood forces that aortic semilunar valve open. Where should blood keep on going to?
Up the aorta,
out to the body. But if the valve sits slightly open, guess what happens to some of that blood?
Backwashes.
Yep. Here it comes, sliding back down, sits back down there in that left ventricle. So thinking stroke volume, is your stroke volume going to be 70?
No.
Maybe it's 50, right? And then if you are looking at only pumping out 50, if you do the math here, what does that tell me about my ejection fraction rate?
It's bad.
It's low. So if you've got valves that are funky and faulty and they don't, you know, stay shut like they're supposed to, that backflow issue is a real big deal. So why would an aortic valve that is leaky, why would that be a really big deal?
Can't maintain blood pressure.
Can't maintain blood pressure. And where's that vessel taking blood?
Everywhere.
Everywhere, right. So this is a really big deal, one that leaks in this particular pathway. This is aortic valve stenosis. That means a narrowing of the valve. And again, if you've got a tight, narrow valve, you're not going to be able to force 70 mils of a stroke volume content through that. So this is yet another issue that's going to reduce our ejection fraction rate. If you've got a tiny little valve, you just can't force the blood through. Let me put it to you this way. It would be like taking a drink of a milkshake through a coffee stirrer. So it'd be very hard to get that much blood moving through a very tiny little opening there.
The pressure would have to be sky high.
It would have to be sky high, and that's exactly what happens, is then we pump harder to get the blood thrown. You've probably heard of this one. We often call this one a heart murmur. Even though that term can mean a number of things, mitral valve prolapse is a problem where the left AV valve, which is called the mitral or bicuspid valve, doesn't stay closed properly. So at what point does that left AV valve close? During ventricular diastole or systole?
Systole,
that's right. And when it closes, we force open the other valve here, this aortic semilunar, and that way the blood can, of course, escape through the aorta. Now, if you are properly slamming shut your mitral valve, you're preventing a backflow into what chamber?
Left atrium.
Yep, left atrium. So unfortunately, if that valve is prolapsed, that means it kind of droops or hangs down into your left ventricle. And when we take those papillary muscles and contract and pull in the heartstrings, it may shut, but may not shut completely. So that's how you can end up getting a backflow of blood up into that left atrium. Again, what does this do to your ejection fraction rate?
Drops the
drops it. And you're probably not pumping out 70 mils every time that ventricle contracts. You're losing a little bit by having it spew back up into that left atrium. Let me see if I can get this one video to load for us real quick. It's a good one. Y'all know how internet is around here, right? Let me see one more time if I can get that to load. Looks like YouTube's working, but just not this video for some reason. Nope. Okay, I'll put the link in D2L, and that way if you'd like to take a look at it. It's actually an echocardiogram, and you can...
I get an echocardiogram once a year. I have a heart murmur. I do too.
So you get to see... Do they turn it so you can see?
It's really cool.
It is cool.
It's not really an issue. I just have to watch it, but...
Right.
It's cool.
Or because you don't want things to...
More cardio exercise. I have a mastural defect. More cardio exercise strengthens those papillary muscles.
Which makes sense.
So when I'm exercising...
They call mine an innocent...
It looks really good.
So it's not really an issue, but
it's not so much. You're right, because you never know when things will change. Mm-hmm. Right.
When I was pregnant, it leaked a little.
I guess that's a lot of stress on the heart.
It's really big.
Yeah. Because all that, we gain so much extra blood from being pregnant. That does put a lot of extra force on there. Yeah.
It went away, though, after.
I guess probably less pressure on that valve. Let me get back to that. Okay. All right, so that takes us down to the very bottom of the page there. Got a question for you at the very bottom. It says, why do you think the mitral valve is more likely to be affected than the tricuspid valve?
Higher pressure.
Higher pressure. That's the entire reason. All right, there's higher pressure on the left side of the heart. Just a little bit more here on stroke volume. It's on page 44. You'll notice at the top we're going to talk about cardiac output this time, and this time we'll tie in stroke volume to this conversation. Okay. Cardiac output is the amount of blood circulated by the heart in a minute's time. You know, back when we covered blood, we said that, you know, females have 4 to 5 liters and males have around 5 to 6 liters of blood. We just settled on 5 liters, right, as being the average for the human body. Well, that is cardiac output. Cardiac output is, on average, around 5 liters of blood. Now, the cardiac output depends on two issues, or two factors, you might say. It depends on the stroke volume, and it depends on your heart rate. So we assume at rest, we assume an average heart rate of 75 beats per minute. And of course, at rest, we assume an average stroke volume of around 70 milliliters of blood. Because we're talking about putting blood into systemic circulation, we're really focusing on that left ventricle. I did want to mention just a side note here. If you're exercising, you may pump your cardiac output up to like 12 or 15 liters per minute. That means you've really got the circulation going. And of course, that depends on raising your heart rate. We're not going to necessarily be able to double or triple our stroke volume, but if you double your heart rate, you can really send more blood out into circulation. So that's where we can see an increase in the cardiac output. Notice when you multiply stroke volume and heart rate together, you'll get 5,220 or 250 milliliters per minute in circulation. Just do a conversion. 1,000 milliliters are found in 1 liter. So you should be roughly sitting at around 5 liters, and that's what we get from this conversion, about 5.25 liters per minute in circulation. You know, you may see your own heart hooked up to a heart monitor, and it may be not 5.25. That's just an average number. That's not what everybody's going to have. It depends on, you know, your heart rate and other factors. But nonetheless, that's an average for what most people should be somewhere near, is 5.25 or 5 liters. Okay, so you'll want to know the two influencing factors over cardiac output are heart rate and stroke volume. And the average cardiac output somewhere in the 5 liters per minute range. 5.25 approximately is what we get if we take our average numbers and multiply them together. We already know that heart rate and stroke volume are related to EDV and ESV, so I just wanted to retie those back in one more time. We know that stroke volume is how much blood is pumped out of the heart during each ventricular systole or contraction event. So we know these numbers can influence our overall cardiac output. So cardiac output, it's how much blood we circulate every minute, and it depends on how efficient the heart is as a pump. Okay, so that's to take you down about halfway of page 44. Do you have any questions on heart rate, stroke volume, cardiac output, EDV, ESV? Okay, so the big three terms at the bottom of the page are these three: preload, contractility, and afterload. So you'll notice what they affect primarily, and that is the stroke volume. Boy, this gets tangled really fast, right? Stroke volume is one of the two major influences on cardiac output. And we know stroke volume is related to end-diastolic and end-systolic volume. So this becomes really tangled really quickly. So let's talk through preload, because that can influence how much blood your heart can pump during every contraction event. So preload is what's coming in. It's kind of like what you're putting in your car, right? If you're taking a trip and you preload your car with your suitcases, you're limited by how big your car is. So I can't necessarily put more in my car than it can hold. You'll notice a term there is underlined. It's the word stretch. Well, if I had a rubbery car, I could pack it full, right? I could pack it really full. So your heart is stretchy, unlike your car, and you can pack it pretty full of blood. So you are limited by how stretchy those cells are in the walls of your ventricles. Why are the ventricles so important? They do the pumping. So we're not really concerned with the two superior atria stretching. We want to know if those two ventricles can stretch. If you have really healthy, strong muscle tissue, they're going to stretch efficiently. What if you have flabby, worn-out muscle tissue in the heart? They're not going to be hard to stretch, are they? So they too can stretch. That's an important thing to keep in mind, because the next term, contractility, is going to be an issue for us. So preload is very similar to the blood coming into the heart. Which of these three, EDV, stroke volume, or ESV, is about equivalent to the blood coming into the heart?
EDV.
EDV. So I'm just going to make a note here. EDV and preload are related. EDV is a volume, preload is the stretch. Okay, so EDV is a volume, preload is a stretch, but they're related, right? So let me give you an idea of how this works. You ever do water balloons? Mm-hmm. So if you put it up to your sink and you start running water, if you've got a fresh set of balloons, they'll stretch, right? And they'll stretch until you can hold maybe, let's say, a half a gallon of water. So the half a gallon of water is my volume, like my EDV. And if I've got a really nice fresh balloon, it's going to stretch. And that stretch is called my preload, right? If I've got a bag of 10-year-old balloons and they're brittle, they're not going to stretch very well. I may be able to force some water in there, but they're not going to stretch. The stretch is key for the next step, which is contractility. So let me take you to contractility, and we'll come back and talk about some of those details in just a moment. You'll notice that contractility is the strength of the contraction. So let's take two scenarios. Let's take a healthy, athletic heart first. If we pour in 120 milliliters of blood, that's our end-diastolic volume, and we have healthy, athletic, muscular heart tissue, the walls stretch. And when that heart muscle contracts, it is with good strength, okay? And so if you contract with good strength, effectively, we say your contractility is good, and we're probably gonna pump out at least 70 milliliters of blood. Let's compare that to a worn-out, flabby heart that has, say, cardiomyopathy. This is a heart that's had damage done to it, and it's kind of like using, you know, underwear with the elastic that's worn out. You know, it stretches, and when you let it go, it doesn't pop back into its position. So if you take a worn-out, flabby heart, you may be able to stretch it with the preload, but when you let go of it, what happens? It doesn't snap, right? So it doesn't have the strength to snap back. In other words, strength is another word for contractility. If you've got worn out, flabby heart muscle tissue, it's going to stretch. It's just not going to snap back with a good strength of contraction. So what does that mean? If you're not snapping back with good strength of contraction, are you probably going to pump out 70 mils? You won't get a good squeeze, right? So you may pop back with less than that. And that tells me what about your ejection fraction rate? It's going to be low. The healthy muscle tissue, good EF, right? The flabby heart muscle tissue, a low EF. So that's where we look at healthy muscle tissue, like heart muscle tissue, being good for contractility, good for pumping out that blood. I'll go ahead and mention these two issues here on your sheet. You'll notice the bullet point, first one says, contractility can increase with extra calcium. I know this takes you way back to Bio-210, right? So let's talk about calcium for just a moment. You may recall calcium is necessary to bind to troponin. It pulls a rope of tropomyosin away from binding sites on those actin filaments. I know these words are familiar, right? Okay, and so if you've got lots and lots of calcium, what do they do for our binding sites?
Hold them open.
Yep, so there's lots of binding sites that are revealed. And what's going to come up and attach to those binding sites?
Myosin heads.
So they come up, they attach, they form cross bridges, they power stroke, muscle contraction can occur. So the more calcium you have in your bloodstream, the more the strength can increase for your heart contraction. This is why if you've got too much calcium in your body, you feel like your heart's beating really hard. So thinking back to hormones, which hormone could be at fault if you have too much calcium in your bloodstream?
PTH,
right. PTH may be breaking down bones. It may be causing kidney issues, cramping in the intestines. That can cause excess calcium to build up. That can cause increased contractility. The treatment for this, fix the parathyroid hormone or give a calcium channel blocker. Sympathetic stimulation, which hormones are working for you now?
Epinephrine,
norepinephrine. You ever come to a test and sit down and your heart's beating so hard you feel like you're gonna die? And you think, if I don't get this test over with soon, I'm gonna have my heart beat out of my chest? That is epinephrine and norepinephrine increasing the strength of the contractions. So if you can calm yourself down, and it's impossible, right? If you can calm yourself down, then you lower the sympathetic influence over your heart, and your heart won't beat as hard. So that's mental stress, right? We unfortunately do it to ourselves. But if you're running, if you're doing physical activity, you want the strength of contraction to increase. So there's a time and place for it. There is a time and place where you'll want the sympathetic stimulation. Let's take these hormones. What does glucagon cause your body to release more of?
Blood sugar.
More blood sugar you got, the harder the heart's going to beat, the more strength of contraction that heart beats. If you've ever had a really sugary meal, you know, you may notice that you have a pretty hard, strong heartbeat going on. It is the strength of that contraction that increases with the extra blood sugar. Thyroxine can also do it. That's thyroid hormone, right? That can make your heart beat stronger. And likewise, there's this drug down there called Digitalis. It's given to people with heart failure, and it makes flabby, worn-out muscle tissue beat more efficiently. So Digitalis is one of those drugs that will actually cause your heart contractions to be more strong. And so that may not be for everybody. That's for people that need this increased contraction. Let's talk about what decreases the strength of your muscle contractions. The first one there is hyperkalemia. Oh, goodness, what does that word mean?
Too much potassium.
So what does potassium do to muscles? Well, not this picture, but what does it do to muscles?
Relaxes them,
right. We know sodium is going to excite muscle cells. We know potassium is going to put them back in their resting state.
Hyperpolarization,
right. So unfortunately, muscle tissue, like the heart, will also hyperpolarize if you've got too much potassium. So potassium chloride is actually what they use to put animals or even people to death with. So excess potassium is not a good thing. It can cause the heart to stop or beat feebly. So do you know which hormone could be the problem here? Who is one of your best friends from endocrine? Regulated sodium, aldosterone, yeah. So this could be an aldosterone issue. And like I said earlier, calcium channel blockers may be used to block calcium in the heart. Their purpose is to decrease the strength of the contraction. In other words, decrease the contractility. Finally, the term afterload is the pressure that we must overcome to get the blood ejected from the heart. So which side of the heart experiences the greatest pressures?
Left side.
Left side. Okay, so take it a step further. If the left ventricle has high pressure during contraction, does the aorta or the pulmonary trunk have the higher of the two pressures?
Aorta.
So if you're pumping blood out of the left ventricle with 120 millimeters of force, your aorta may even have a higher pressure because it's got walls that can squeeze around that blood. So we've got to be able to overcome any pressure sitting in that aorta to eject the blood through stroke volume. That's the term we call afterload. You know, it's what comes in must eventually get back out. So afterload is the pressures that we must overcome to pump the blood out into either systemic circulation or into pulmonary circulation. So what if you have a stenotic aortic valve? Meaning, what if you've got an aortic valve that's become tightened and narrowed? You need a lot of pressure. So that left ventricle says, you know, I need to pump really hard to get the blood out into circulation because only half my blood is getting through. So over time, what do you think this does to the ventricle muscle tissue? Wears it out, gets big, flabby. What does that do to your contractility over time? Decreases it, right? Your heart becomes big and flabby. So we've got to make sure that vessels stay open, you know, no clogging of vessels. We've got to make sure that we've got, you know, valves that operate like they should, because all of these things can play off of one another and cause heart failure. Okay, so I promised you I'd go back to preload for just a moment. Let me hit those real quick for you. The stretch in your heart can be increased by venous return and by venous pressure. What we mean is if you're exercising and you're bringing more blood back to the heart, then as long as you've got stretchy walls, you're going to be able to move those walls a little wider to accommodate a little more blood. So the preload can actually accommodate exercise and stretch as long as that muscle tissue can accommodate. There's that word again, stretch. You've probably heard of nitroglycerin tabs. These tablets are given to people who have, say, angina or heart issues to keep them from having chest pains. So it decreases the stretch of the heart muscle tissue. It actually works by saying, hey, heart muscle, don't demand so much oxygen when you work. Okay, so it decreases the stretch of the muscle tissue, and of course, that's the load that we're putting into the heart. All right, so this is heavy duty stuff, this preload, contractility, and afterload. Instead of getting you into page 45 and 46, I think we'll just stop at the bottom, and then we'll pick up with page 46 on Tuesday. We will finish the chapter on Tuesday, and then we'll work into some blood vessels.